You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. This business talk show airs live on Tuesday and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Say, if you're listening to this show at some point in the future as a podcast, well then, welcome. And thank you for taking the time to be with us during this interviews or series of interviews. We would encourage you, though, to consider the possibility of listening to the broadcast live during our broadcast times, heard here exclusively on octalkradio.net. You know, the goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, to make better, more informed decisions. If you want to join the conversation today because you're listening live, it's one of the advantages of being a live listener, find the community chat room section of the octalkradio.net website, log in, post your thoughts and questions. Our producer, Paul, scans them, brings them to our attention, and possibly we'll work them into one of the two interviews that I have today. Speaking of our two guests on the show today, our first guest is Mickey Troxell of Centaur University. She is CEO and founder of Centaur University, and I've invited her to be on the show to share how Centaur University helps individuals find internal happiness. Also, I'd like to know more about, and we're going to talk about, how Centaur University, which is a private nonprofit university, offers world-class fast-track education and certification for a counselor degree, in a counselor degree program. So we're going to cover all that, but first, let's welcome Mickey to the radio show. Mickey, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Let's begin the interview by simply having you discuss your career path, if you will, your professional progression to now starting and founding Centaur University. I know that you've had a number of interesting avocations. So let's ask you just to share that with our audience, please, Mickey.
Sure. Well, first of all, I started out working as, obviously going to school myself. I went to a traditional college. I went to Cypress University, which is in Cypress, California. Became an intern, and soon after that, I actually, just working in the field of chemical dependency, I found out that I wanted to start my own treatment center, and started up my own treatment center and owned that for 9 years in Huntington Beach, and that was called Seacliff Recovery Center. And I sold that back in 2004, and then I found out that I wanted to start teaching. And so in 2004, I actually started teaching for a place called ICDS, which was a Texas tech-based school. And that sold out to a place called Health Staff Training Institute, and I taught with Health Staff after that. And I taught core classes, which were fast-track schools for chemical dependency counselors, and then I also taught practicum. And I found out that I really enjoyed teaching practicum, because those were the individuals that had already gone through all their core classes and then were actually out in the field themselves doing their internships and then coming back and talking about it and needing some practical experience about how to deal with potential issues, not only with the business part of it, but also with the clientele that they were working with. And from that particular experience, what I ended up doing from there is I ended up taking and, of course, my cell phone's going off here. I know. What I ended up doing at that point is I also had a equine therapy going on that I started back in 2000, equine-assisted psychotherapy called Pegasus ECT. And with Pegasus ECT, I also started a nonprofit called the NACPET, as well as CETHA, which was a Certified Therapy Horse Association, and the National Association of Equine Professionals for Therapy. And with those two nonprofits, the young lady that I was teaching for health staff, she had an idea about maybe starting something different with her college there at health staff, and thought about maybe taking health staff and turning it into a university. And so her and I were talking about maybe adding something with horsemanship, or maybe even vet techs, or something that could kind of work together with the nonprofits that I had going on. And we even came up with the name of Centaur University. And we were thinking about maybe going into a partnership or something to that degree, maybe a couple of years out. And sadly, in January of 2009, she had passed away, and she was only 49 years old, which was really sad. She had passed away in her sleep from a stomach virus. And in February of 2009, because health staff at that time wasn't quite sure what they were going to do, I went ahead and opened up Centaur University on my own. So lo and behold.
You are quite the entrepreneur, aren't you? I mean, you have quite a varied, that's why I was intrigued to ask you the opening question. I had the, in preparing for this interview, I had the opportunity to hear, I think, a recent interview that you did on LA Talk Radio about your equine therapy work. And I found that fascinating to listen to your interview that you did there. And so it's a number, you have a number of different business ventures, don't you, as an entrepreneur?
I do.
In your career?
I do. I have several things going on, and have helped other treatment facilities get up and get started, especially specializing in women's studies. Back in 2004, I've gone on and been clinical directors at several facilities and helped them get up and get started. It seems like I don't ever have enough irons in the pot.
And many entrepreneurs have that same gene or that same quality, which is the ability to multitask and this avid curiosity and desire to kind of be involved. And so I want to ask you, because I'm intrigued about Centaur University. It's a for-profit university. So what is that like to create a business model around that? And then talk to our audience, if you would, about what it is, the service that you provide, and sort of how it's different in the marketplace.
Well, actually, did you say for-profit or non-profit?
I think I said for-profit.
Well, actually, we have recently this year, as of April, we actually brought Centaur University under NACPET and CIFA to become non-profit. But originally, yes, it was a for-profit when I originally opened it up as a corporation, as Centaur University, Inc. But recently, under this year, as of April, it's become a non-profit under NACPET as the parent company.
Okay.
So it is now nonprofit, and so it has been quite a venture structuring a business as a nonprofit versus the for-profit. I had probably more struggles having it as a for-profit than I do as a nonprofit.
Why is that?
Well, it seems for-profit. I'm very familiar with the for-profit because I've been an entrepreneur for so long over the past 18, 19 years. I don't know how to really explain that. It just seems like it's opened up some other avenues. We really haven't had any, that's one of the problems that we're having is I need to be able to get some, obviously get a grant writer. And maybe start applying for some grants and stuff because we haven't been able to do that yet. But it just seems like for some reason it's running along a little bit smoother. There seems like there's been some other openings. There's more receptive. We're more receptive in the community with being a nonprofit as opposed to being for-profit. Obviously offer more scholarship opportunities, at least partial scholarships under the nonprofit. Our schools, our seats seem to be filling up a little bit more with the nonprofit status versus the profit status, and it really hasn't been any other income coming in as far as grants or anything. It just the nonprofit seems to be more beneficial. And it's so, more towards what I want to do anyway with all my organizations, which is to help vets, Native Americans, and low-income families.
Excellent. And your niche, if I can say that term, that marketing term, is around fast track, as opposed to other programs, certification that take significantly longer. So can you tell us about the reason for existence, if you will, of Centaur University? What is the service and the education that you're providing?
Yes. The service that we provide is very unique as far as fast track. Back when I went to school, there weren't fast track schools available, which would have been nice. It took me 2 years to go through the program conventionally. Here at our facility, you can go through it within 3 months, 6 months, or 9 months. It depends on the program that you want to go through. We obviously have in-class Monday through Friday. We either have that or all-day Saturday classes available, as well as online. And our online is very unique compared to any other fast-track schools that are out there. Because it's interface, it's face-to-face, like you're in the class, so it's definitely accountability. And we're the only school that's approved for online practicum through CADAC, which is the certification process for chemical dependency counselors, because of the accountability of face-to-face for online.
And how did you, as an entrepreneur, not an educator now, but as an entrepreneur, how did you see this market opportunity? Was it strictly through personal experience, or were there other factors that led you to believe that if you build this university, it'll be a successful business?
I believe it was probably just my experience with teaching in the first place. It's my desire to teach and give back what I've been given. And being in the field itself, and my desire and passion with that, and knowing that there was a market out there originally to begin with, I knew that it would be successful from the experience that I had previously from working for the schools that I was teaching for originally.
And many successful businesses have been built based on an entrepreneur personally recognizing a need or seeing an opportunity to improve a current, offering that's out there. Matter of fact, recently over the past several months, I've had a number of entrepreneurs from Orange County who have built businesses off of personal experience and been very successful about that. So it's interesting to see that also a university can be started by an entrepreneur who has that same experience. So that's great, Mickey.
Yes, and another thing that we've definitely seen a need with, and this is based on personal experience being in the field, are mental health professionals with license, whether they're LCSWs, LPCs, which are coming to the state of California, which are licensed professional counselors, as well as MFTs that are. There's more and more that are actually working in the field of chemical dependency and working in the working actually in treatment facilities without the education of chemical dependency. So one of the niches that I've moved into, and it's something that's really important and passionate to my heart, is to make sure that these professionals, as educated as they are, to make sure that they also have that education, that they're also seeking that credential as far as becoming a certified chemical dependency counselor, or at least have that education behind them working with the clientele that they're working with, because it is a different population other than just working strictly mental health.
Yes.
So we do work with that as well.
A little bit later in the interview, I'm going to ask you to share more about the kind of the professional field of chemical dependency counseling, but we're going to hold that for a second. We're going to take a short break, ladies and gentlemen, and when we come back, the next question that I'm going to ask Mickey Troxell to answer is, of all the experiences she's had, kind of the key lessons that she's learned that's allowed her as an entrepreneur to build successful ventures. We call it here on Critical Mass, the radio program, if you could share with us your guiding principle. So, Mickey, give that some thought. When we come back from this word from our sponsor, we'll ask Mickey to answer that question. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitment in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plan and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Mickey Troxell from Cent, founder and CEO of Centaur University, is our guest today. We said before the break, Mickey, we were going to ask you to share with us a bit about your guiding principle. Would you be so kind?
My guiding principle as an entrepreneur is, in fact, that nothing is impossible. Nothing is impossible, and to have faith. That's something that has carried me through all these years with every business venture that I've had, and every single one of them has been successful. When I fall back on nothing is impossible, and everything is possible, if I just believe, if I take on the mindset, such as like the Wright brothers or Thomas Edison, even when others do not, I have success and have faith. Even when things look bleak, wonderful things transpire. So that's my guiding principle. I hope that helps.
That's beautiful. I marvel in the 3+ years we've been doing the show and the 400 guests that we've had on Critical Mass, the radio program, Mickey, that when I have entrepreneurs on, I respect a lot of things that can be done in business. For me, I think the hardest thing to do is to start a business from nothing. Until you've done it, you don't appreciate how challenging creating something from nothing other than your own energy and vision really is. And certainly over the last 3 or 4 years with the slowdown in the economy and all the other things that we've seen, I think it's even been more difficult for entrepreneurs to get businesses off the ground. Doesn't mean it can't happen. It just means it takes a lot more perseverance and belief. And really many times the entrepreneurs really only left with themselves facing into the challenge of creating a business, because many times it is their brainchild.
Yes, I agree.
So let me ask you, tell our audience who may be certainly not as familiar as you are, or maybe not familiar at all with the area of chemical dependency counseling, and as a profession, how you see that profession sort of evolving here within the U.S. You know, there are people that listen to our show that are not business owners and CEOs. They're executives. Some may be looking for a second career, or maybe looking to change careers. Don't really know who may find this podcast at some point in the future, Mickey. So I guess I'm asking for you to share a little bit of your knowledge of this industry and this area of expertise with our audience.
Well, wonderful. A chemical dependency counselor is in fact someone, it's a professional in the field of mental health that helps guide another individual through different approaches, different types of modalities, individually, also in groups, forms of education and lectures, to come about different awarenesses in their life, learning new skills and tools, developing healthy support systems, to become aware of things that interfere with their personal happiness and long-term recovery process when it comes to the disease of alcoholism, And alcoholism is, in fact, according to the American Medical Association, is in fact a disease of addiction. Really, it's alcohol and other drugs, and it's a genetic disease, and it's you know, something that is a very specialized field for an individual to get into, and it really is very beneficial personally as well as professionally for growth all the way around.
I have to believe too that this area of chemical dependency has been somewhat evolving as science learns more about it, as the practice becomes maybe more rich with experience, you know, as different thoughts are tried, and maybe even it's become somewhat more globalized in the approaches, you know. And I'm a very big believer that not only in, you know, traditional medicine, if you want to think of it that way, but in mental health, there's a lot of value from globalizing our knowledge base and not just looking at problems maybe with a Western bent, as maybe historically has been done here in the country as well as, you know, other parts of the world. So I have to imagine that this field is also kind of evolving and growing as well. Is that true?
Oh, definitely. It's definitely evolving. It's definitely growing. In fact, here in California, the certification process wasn't mandatory until this year, in fact. A lot of people, unfortunately, with chemical dependency, and California is pretty, it's unbelievable that here in California that individuals could actually practice chemical dependency counseling without having a certification or actual schooling. Now, treatment centers, on the other hand, obviously wouldn't hire someone that didn't have formal training or schooling involved. But unfortunately, it wasn't mandatory for someone to actually have schooling or certification. But now, just recently here in the state of California, it's actually mandatory for someone to actually be certified in the field of chemical dependency, and eventually they'll actually have a license for chemical dependency counselors. And it's unfortunate that it's taken so long for something like that to happen, because it is such a specialized field working with special populations.
And what does I hate to say it this way, but it's, you know, it is what it is. What do the job prospects look like for people in this field?
Well, they're actually excellent. Now, starting out, they may not make a whole lot of money when they're first starting out, but starting out with any career, you may not necessarily make a whole lot of money. And you definitely do not need a whole lot of education to start out in this career. It's actually a certificate program, which is less than an associate's degree. But, of course, you want to hopefully continue with your education and get an associate's, a bachelor's, a master's, and maybe even a doctorate as time continues. But once you continue in this field and you develop a name for yourself and develop a particular style, you have a potential of making quite a bit of money. People that are working in the marketing aspect can make anywhere between, you know, $150,000. Some of them even make $200,000 a year. Some individuals that are working in doing the counseling part, you know, when they first start out, they can make anywhere from, you know, as low as $20,000, you know, a year to as much as $60,000. Just starting out in the field. And, of course, that can go up. And depending on what your desires are and what it is that you want to do, you have the potential of making quite a bit.
So, you said something earlier, Mickey, that kind of I want to circle back to, which is the state of California, and I don't want to misstate this, so keep me honest, please.
Okay.
Just mandated that the requirement for certification for chemical dependency counselors.
Before that,
it wasn't a requirement.
It was not, unfortunately. Isn't that amazing?
But from an entrepreneur's perspective, I'm always intrigued to see when government policy or regulations open a window of business opportunity that heretofore didn't exist, or at least accelerates it.
Yes.
You know, I've had people in green energy and solar and natural gas, and we've talked about, you know, that relationship between government regulation and consumer behavior. And so it sounds like to me in this case, for you at least, there is then a business opportunity because there now is a requirement and a recognition that you need to get a certification, and you're there to be able to certify people.
I am. Yeah, it's a good time to be in business as far as offering the certificate for the chemical dependency counseling, and of course their whole certification process is. They do have to have quite a few hours and stuff. They have to have 4,000 hours in the field of chemical dependency, actually practicing in the field of chemical dependency before they can actually be certified. And they also have a test that they take, which is pretty intense, that they take through KDAC. There are other certification boards out there, but they do have to, there's actually 10 that are approved by the state of California. And KDAC's at the top of that list, and then KDE, and then there's other ones. I'm not sure what the other boards are. But they do have to be certified now in the state of California, which is a good time to be in business.
So I don't want to neglect any other part of Centaur University that may have offerings that the audience would be interested in. I did want to focus in on chemical dependence counseling, but I wanted to give you a chance, Mickey, if there's any other areas or you're planning any of the other future offerings, I wanted to give you a moment to kind of share that with our audience if that's appropriate.
Yes, we have a master's in counseling psychology with focus in on the MFT. Marriage and Family Therapy, with concentration in that, as well as specializing in addiction, which is a 16-month fast-track program, and that is starting in the spring of 2012. So we're going to have a master's program starting up here pretty soon, and that'll be for MFTs, those that want to become MFTs, but also specialize in addiction at the same time, which is, like I said, a passion of mine, as well as those that are already MFTs or psychologists or LCSWs that would like to come back and get an education in addiction. They're welcome to take our certificate program and transfer some of their classes that they've already taken to what we've already done. They wouldn't have to take as many classes. As a matter of fact, I think they only take 4 or 5 classes as opposed to all 8.
So physically, and then I'm going to ask you for your website presence, if someone was interested in learning more about Centaur University, Mickey, how would they do that?
They could actually call our office, which is 949-646-8018, or they can also look us up on the web at centauruniversity.com, and Centaur is C-E-N-T-A-U-R. It's half person, half horse. I like to say half woman, half horse, but of course half man, half horse, whatever.
Okay, and physically the university is located where in Orange County?
The university is located in Costa Mesa off of 17th Street, and that's 17th Street in the Wells Fargo building is where our classrooms are. And that's 17th and Santa Ana there in Costa Mesa. Our administration offices is also on 17th Street, but it's on West 17th at 711 West 17th, Suite A8.
Well, Mickey, it's been a pleasure to have you as our guest today, and I want to, congratulate you for being a successful serial entrepreneur. Two, congratulate you for your life's kind of commitment and focus to the areas that you've put your energy into in bettering and helping people who need the help. So it's been a joy to have you on the show. Thanks for being a friend of Critical Mass, the radio show, and welcome to our community.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
You too.
Mickey Troxell, CEO and founder of Centaur University, as well as a experienced serial entrepreneur with a number of different ventures.
we're going to take a sponsorship break. And then I've invited Wade Sloan of Sedoxia Capital Management to come back to Critical Mass, the radio program, because I'd like to pick his brain a little bit about all the stuff that's been going on in the financial markets and the federal debt. And the Wade puts out a newsletter that I read as soon as it hits my inbox that I find to be one of the most clearly written and informative newsletters that I receive on a regular basis. And it was off of a recent newsletter that I received from him that I thought, you know, I need to have Wade back on the program to sort of bring his viewpoints to the audience. So we're going to do that. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio program. This is Rick Franzi. As I said, my guest is a returning guest, Wade Sloan of Sedoxia Capital Management. Wade, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Oh, hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's my pleasure, my friend. Let's start, though, before we get into a couple other questions about all that's been going on, as I said before you came on the program, in the financial markets. Let's ask you to share a little bit about your firm. So could you talk about Sedoxia Capital Management, sort of what you do, and how it's differentiated in the marketplace?
Sure. Yeah, as some of your listeners may recall, I managed one of the 10 largest growth funds at American Century in Kansas City. It was a $20 billion fund. In 2008, I started Sedoxia Capital Management, which is Greek for optimism. And basically, I'm a full-service boutique investment firm. So I invest for individuals, I manage a hedge fund, and I'm actually in the process of rolling out some institutional funds for corporate retirement plans. So I do a little bit of everything when it comes to investing. As far as what's different, one way you can think about Sedoxia relative to some of the large wirehouse brokerage firms is I'm more of the Switzerland. So, you know, there aren't any conflicts of interest as far as investment strategies or products that I offer my clients. I make money when my clients make money, and I make less money when they lose money. So there's no conflict there. The other differentiating aspect, I would say, is more from an experience standpoint. So while a lot of the participants in the financial industry, some of the structures are set up for sales, and the experience might be a little bit different. So, you know, I've published a few books. I teach at UCI. I have an MBA, CFA, CFP. These are specific credentials in the industry. So, you know, that's basically what I would say differentiates Sedoxia from some of the other financial institutions out there.
Okay. And, you know, I mentioned in the open that you publish a newsletter on a regular basis, and I'm an avid fan of reading it. And it was really off the last one that you had sent out that I thought, man, it'd be a good idea to have you back. And here's why. Because this past few years have been very unsettling for many people. I know there's always opportunity and uncertainty, and that's great, and that's what investment advisors help you to sort of come to grips with. But the recent issues that we've seen, both from whatever's going on in Europe with the euro and the sovereign debt, and then the U.S. debt ceiling discussion, and then
the issues that happened with S&P. So I just guess I would ask, from your perspective, and I recognize, you know, as a licensed financial advisor, we have to put kind of a controls around what you're talking about. I'm asking if you could share some of the thoughts that you had in your newsletter, and also maybe how does this affect, from your advice, the decisions that a mid-market CEO who's trying to build a business, trying to keep his or her employees kind of focused on the opportunities in front of them, and to sort of tone down some of the noise that's been going on and certainly the worry. Can you give us, from your perspective, you know, what you would be advising a mid-market CEO to kind of be focusing on with all that they've been reading and hearing in the marketplace about financial issues?
Sure. Yeah, it's been just a tremendous roller coaster for investors and CEOs in the corporate world. You know, just going back a few years to 2008, 2009, which was a legitimate financial crisis. And what I think we have now is a crisis in confidence driven towards politicians, which explains why CEOs are sitting on $2.5 trillion. So what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, we have seen responsible activity from the consumer side. So consumers are deleveraging. They are saving more. They are spending less. We're seeing responsible activity going on in the corporate world, reducing debt and piling up cash. What they're not doing, they have short arms and deep pockets. They're not spending. They're concerned. There's a lot of uncertainty regarding regulation and tax policy. And then, let's face it, we're in a global world now. So there's ripple effects when Iceland and Greece and Dubai, things that we never even cared about before, but now since we live in a globalized flat world, these have impacts on the psyches of CEOs here. So there are a few things different now relative to history. What you're seeing regarding confidence is that CEOs and investors are afraid of their own shadows now. So each debt discussion, you know, each debate on the debt ceiling or tax policy, people are worried about a contagion. That'll take us back to 2008 and 2009, where we kind of get in this panic phase. And so from a corporate mid-market CEO standpoint, I mean, I would tell them the same thing I tell my investors, is the best thing you can do is not listen to the turn off your TVs, because especially now, all you hear is doom and gloom. What I think CEOs need to focus on are actions. What can I do to take advantage of this uncertainty and volatility? Of course, you're going to do it responsibly, and you're not going to jump in head first. But, you know, a lot of corporate CEOs and a lot of your listeners have been around. If you go back to 73, 74, which, you know, was a long time ago, and CEOs today are a lot younger, but if you just looked at the amount of uncertainty, where you were coming out of the Vietnam War, we had 9% unemployment. The stock market was down 50%. We had an oil embargo. And the president, our president, was in the process of impeachment and was forced to resign. And, you know, if you thought the confidence was high then, you know, you might want to relook at that. And the fact of the matter is the market's up 14-fold. Since then, and we've been through assassinations and currency crises and SARS and mad cow, and been through a lot. So I just encourage CEOs to see, not get lost in the trees, see the forest, and put things in perspective. There's a lot of challenges that we face, but we've faced, you know, just as many in the past, and whether it's the current politicians or if we vote them out and put new ones in, eventually these issues get resolved.
I had the good fortune way to see Charlie Rose interview with Warren Buffett following Warren's op-ed piece in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And I had it on my TiVo, on my DVR, and I went in and put it as an option to save it until I deleted it, because I found his conversation to be very thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And I thought it brought a lot of, for me, I respect Warren Buffett based on his past performance, and there are few Warren Buffetts in this country. And so I guess not asking you to comment on Warren Buffett's op-ed piece in the New York Times, or maybe even if you've seen what he said on the radio program, but one of our listeners who must have seen it as well pulled a quote from Charlie Rose or from Warren Buffett that night, who said, "Capitalism is confidence monetized." And so,
yeah, that's exactly right.
I guess, could you react to that?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back in history, 1900, we had about 10 democracies. Today, we have more than 100, and everyone's aware of the Arab uprisings. And the fact of the matter is that standards of living are rising globally. Here in the U.S., in Europe, we've enjoyed the fruits, and you know, arguably over the next few years, we face our challenges. But you know, here in the U.S., we're 5% of the global population. So there's a whole other 95%, and they're just starving for capitalism and the benefits that come from democracy and capitalism. And their standards of living are going to explode in the years and decades ahead of us. And although our growth may not be as robust as it was in the 20th century, what we can do is we can benefit from those trends and capitalism and offer our services and products to those areas of the world that are benefiting from capitalism. So, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Warren Buffett's commentary. And, you know, I made that comment about turning the TV off. The people that you really want to listen to, it's not the talking heads on TV. It's those people who have been through cycles that have a track record of success. And, you know, you don't really get a lot of that on TV. You do occasionally. And, you know, those investors with a long-term track record of success are the people that you want to pay attention to.
You know, I kind of heard in your answer a bit about, and I think it's a challenge for some, certainly for many smaller companies and even mid-market companies, and that is to figure out how do you take advantage of this global macroeconomic forces, because it's clear to me, Wade, that the multinational U.S. corporations that do business around the globe, you know, have a very healthy balance sheet. You alluded to the amount of cash that they're kind of sitting on, that they're waiting to do something with eventually. And when you look at the, you know, quarterly profits, et cetera, they tend to be performing well given the challenges that are domestic in our economy. It's hard, though, for many mid-market CEOs to figure out how to get outside their local market just by virtue of maybe the products and services that they've chosen to offer or their inexperience with, you know, scaling a business to go internationally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think for the small and mid-market, it's only becoming even more commoditized. So, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, there wasn't a lot of international competition. In today's environment, if you're running a small business, you're competing against somebody in China sitting on their laptop, going online, going to Alibaba.com, ordering a bunch of things, and then exporting them here for, you know, 30% less than what it costs to manufacture here in the U.S. So where before we had the loaded gun, you know, now we're kind of operating with a squirt gun, and what it really requires of small and mid-market companies is to be really focused on how can I differentiate. It can't be just on cost, because if you look at labor and technology and manufacturing costs, it's becoming even more difficult to differentiate. So it really requires ingenuity, thinking out of the box, and how can I compete against, you know, the rest of the world with something other than cost. And you know, you're seeing it across all kinds of industries. I mean, people are familiar with the bigger markets like the auto industry, I mean, that's been a train wreck happening in ultra slow motion. I mean, we've been losing market share, haven't been competitive, losing the Japanese, and now there's all other types of foreign automakers. That same thing is happening to small mid-market CEOs, and so you know, have to create, innovate, and differentiate.
Exactly. We're going to take our last sponsorship break, but when we come back, Wade had mentioned that he's a published author. I'm going to ask him, because we didn't get a chance on his last time here on Critical Mass, the radio program, to talk about one of his books, 1001 Truths About Investing. So I'm going to ask Wade just to share a little bit about the purpose and the content of that book with us. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
If you're a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gefella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Wade Sloan is our guest today, published author. So, Wade, tell us about 1001 Truths About Investing.
Sure. Yeah, one of the main reasons I wrote the book is, you know, investing in many ways is a lot like going to the car mechanic for me. Very confusing. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors in the financial industry. There's a lot of, I would argue, structural conflicts of interest. And I think what we've seen over especially the last 3 to 5 years, you know, people are starting to realize, well, a lot of these financial institutions may not be in the best interest of me. They're looking out for their own best interest. So with 76 million baby boomers retiring now, I think it's becoming more important than ever for investors to educate themselves and to really take control of their finances, because it's never been as confusing than ever. So as part of my book, 1001 Truths, I really try to break it down to investors, you know, where the blind spots are, and try to explain in layman's terms some of the challenges that investors face. The other aspect, and a lot of what I write about, is about the opportunities. So like we talked about before, there's a lot of structural challenges, especially our government faces. But, you know, there are companies like Facebook and Google. There's a lot going on in alternative energy, electric cars, nanotechnology, companies that are solving a lot of problems in healthcare, whether it's the aging population, the obesity epidemic, and we already touched upon, you know, some of the explosive areas of growth in the emerging middle classes. And so a lot of what I write about are opportunities where, you know, if you're worried about escalating energy prices and, you know, the bills that are facing investors and corporations, well, you can profit from those same problems. And I try to point out companies and industries that are benefiting from that. So it really covers a very wide array of investing topics and industry areas. And I just try to make it as accessible and explainable to both the more seasoned investor and also for the layman as well.
You know, Wade, I think one of the more damaging aspects of the financial meltdown, the crisis, the thing that started this whole recession, is the the global eroding of confidence in the kind of American financial system, whether it be, in Asia with China kind of looking at this American model of financial whatever, or here back in the U.S. for people on Main Street who, by virtue of the reporting that went on, began to realize the way that some of these organizations were structured, built, and what their real motivation was, really, I think, caused people to have to rethink what they thought was a very fair and good way to save for their retirement when they saw both two things happen. One, their savings go down significantly, and two, they start reading articles about the kind of shenanigans, if you will, or at least business practices that were employed on, you know, by some of these financial firms. I think that's, it's going to take a longer time, in my opinion, to recover from than even the monetary and fiscal policy issues and challenges that we're facing in the marketplace today.
Yeah, no, I think those are all fair comments. I mean, trust and confidence, all those things have eroded. At the same time, like I alluded to earlier, it's more important than ever for people to focus on investing. I mean, if you're talking about 76 million baby boomers that are just starting to retire and, you know, a lot of these entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, they're either going to be reduced or they're not going to be there at all. And when you look at the investment options out there right now, when you're earning 0.5%, you have $8.5 trillion in the bunker or hiding in the cave or under the mattress, whatever you want to say, you're losing money. You're going backwards. And so, you know, unless you want to be working, you know, at Walmart in your 80s, I think investors more than ever need to do their homework. They need to efficiently and rationally, not emotionally, not panicking, look at their financial futures. The way they're going to build that trust and confidence is to ask those tough questions. Ask about that small print. How are you compensated? How are you making money? What am I paying? Explain to me the strategy so I understand. And if you don't get answers to those questions, that trust and confidence is going to be tough to come by. And, you know, in my opinion, you're going to be doing yourself a disservice if you think about your future.
I view working with your financial advisor the same way I view working with your doctor, and that is it's a partnership. And you need to be respectful of their domain knowledge, but you also need to kind of make sure that you, at the end of the day, make the decisions either as it relates to your health or your financial health. And so I think many times people impart on a doctor too much power to make decisions for them. And I think historically in the financial area, a segment of our population just kind of turned over the money and trusted the financial advisors without doing all the things that you just talked about doing, Wade.
Yeah, I mean, Ronald Reagan famously said, you know, trust but verify. And so, I mean, I think that same principle applies. And, yeah, it was real easy in the 80s and 90s when the markets just went up every year, you know, up 20% a year in the late 90s. That was a bubble, and, you know, that 20 years of bliss has gone away. And so, you used to be able to do that, and, you know, everybody made money and nobody cared. Now it's what's left over the crumbs. We have to be more efficient in how we invest, and so like you said, you need to trust but verify.
Okay, so the final question: someone would like to learn more about your firm, your books, your newsletter. How do they do that, Wade?
Sure. First of all, you can go to my website, which is sidoxia.com. That's S-I-D as in David, O-X-I-A. I also have Investing Caffeine blog, which gets, I guess, distributed to a number of different websites. But if you go to investingcaffeine.com, you can actually sign up for that newsletter that you referenced. You just put it in, it's free, and you get it on a monthly basis. Listeners are also welcome to call at 949-258-4322. I'm here in Newport Beach. And as far as social networking goes, people can keep track of me on Twitter or Facebook as well.
Well, thank you for coming on and sharing some of your perspective. I appreciate your views on investing and the kind of things that are going on in the world, and I do look forward to your monthly newsletter. So thanks for continuing to invest the time and energy to create those newsletters and being on our show here today. Wade, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. It was great being on.
Have a good day.
You too.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that both of our guests gave you some ideas, insights, and advice that you might be able to use to make more informed decisions. It is our pleasure here on Critical Mass, the radio show, to bring a wide range of guests to you so that you can learn from as wide a diverse group of people as possible. So until the next time, this is Rick Franzi, host of Critical Mass, the radio show, saying I hope all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, only on OCTalkRadio.net.